What would it take to live the life you wanted? To stop the cycle of failed resolutions, burnout, and frustration, and step onto a better path to lasting transformation, one where the small steps matter more than the big ones, where a setback actually frees you to move forward, where the decision to start outweighs perfection, and where it's not all up to you. That's the power to change.
A couple weeks ago, I asked you the question, who wants to change? Many of you put your hands up. I asked, who needs to change? And many of you put your hands up. And we just passed Quitter's Day. So how are you doing? How are things going, huh? Doing great? You know, it's like, things are going great. Here's the good news. If you have quit, all hope is not lost, okay? That doesn't mean you've ruined your year. There's a chance to pick up that change that you want to see in your life again. And if you haven't quit, here's the bad news. You're not out of the woods yet, okay? There's still a lot of months in front of us. And if you're like me, after like 3 straight weeks of gray outside, I'm ready to quit everything, okay? So the truth is, change is inevitable. It is a part of our life. And whether you want to or not, you are going to change this year. And so our hope is to help you be intentional about the change that you want to see. We can kind of control a little bit of the help that's going to guide us in the things that we cannot control in our life. So week 1, we talked about the power to change. Week 2, we talked about the process. The power to change is God. It begins with God. God's power through me is what changes me. And the process is who before do. God wants to change how you see you in order to shape or change what you do in your life. If you miss those, I would encourage you to go back and watch it. We're kind of building on those foundational principles. And today, we are going to talk about the people that play a key role in the change that you want to see in your life. And so I want to welcome you to Cedar Creek this snowy, cold weekend. Thanks for all of you who made it to our physical locations. And I know many of you are watching online on TV. There are some men tuning in from Toledo Correctional. So those of you who are here physically, let's just put our hands together to welcome those who are watching from home or the men at TOCI just to say hello. How many of you have heard the Jim Rohn quote? You are the average of the 5 people you spend the most time with. I imagine some of you have heard that before, or maybe you've heard this, show me your friends, I'll show you your future. The truth is, there's this principle that the people who are closest to you, they play a pretty important role in shaping your behavior, shaping your life. About 10 years ago, there was a friend of mine on staff, we were coworkers at the time, and he wanted to lose about 50 pounds, so 1 year, he had a vision for his life. He had a plan that he was going to step into, and he was all in. His intention was to move forward. And so a few weeks in, maybe about a month in, I don't remember exactly when, I was chatting with him. I was like, hey, how's it going? How's your process or progress? And he was like, man, things are going great. I said, is it as hard as you thought it was going to be? And he said, well, what I didn't expect was that the hardest part is the people that I'm close to. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, I'll go over for family dinner night. And my mom's like, what? You don't like my home cooking anymore? And he's like, well, yes. You know, he would get up and go for a walk. And after a few weeks of that, his wife would be like, you're going for a walk again? And so what you see is, your friends, they're either fueling or they're oftentimes unintentionally fighting the progress that you want to make. And it may be what they're going through. It may just be they feel awkward about it, but the goal is not to quit your friends. Well, okay, maybe some of you might have some toxic friends that it's pretty good to hit eject on today. But the goal is not to quit your friends, it's to audit the people that you do life with. Maybe one of the reasons that change is hard has less to do with you, and it has more to do with who you allow around you, okay? And so it's just good to take a pause and go, hey, at work, at school, old friends that you've hung out with for years, it's like, Like, man, the spaces that you belong are so important. I believe many of you have heard this passage before. It's a principle from the Jewish scriptures in the book of Ecclesiastes. Two are better than one, for they can help each other succeed. If one person falls, the other can reach out and help. But someone who falls alone is in real trouble. I imagine if I were to ask for hands, many of you have heard that verse before. You probably heard it at weddings. Yeah, that's right. Some of you are like, I've heard that before at a wedding. The interesting thing is that's not a wedding passage. It can apply to marriages, but it's not written for marriages. It's a life principle. You and I need friends. We need people who can help us because you know what? You're going to fall, and so am I, and we're going to need people around us. Do you know when the hardest time is to find a friend who can help? Is when you need help and you don't have any friends around you. Like when your life is in trouble and you haven't invested in life-giving friends, I'm telling you, that is the hardest time to find them. And so, trying to do life alone is going to lead to all sorts of failure. It's like you fall and you can't get up. So if we're going to change, here's your bottom line that I want you to remember. Belonging fuels behavior. The spaces in which you belong will shape who you become. It'll shape and influence the behavior. And so if you're alone, it's going to shape your behavior. You're going to be limited to you. It'll feel lonely. And then here's the thing. Even if you feel like you belong in some spaces, you feel like you have friends, if you're belonging in an unhealthy place, it will fuel unhealthy behavior in your life. I had a friend really close to in college, my freshman year. We lived in what used to be known as Carter Hall at the University of Toledo. Go Rockets! And he joined a fraternity. And he pretty much, almost wrecked his college career. Like, he was a scholarship student, a leadership UT student, and after he started belonging there, it just changed the focus and rhythms and everything of his life. Your character will be shaped by the company that you keep. Now, again, I'm not saying get rid of your friends. I just want you to do an audit. I want to offer, actually, a framework to help you think through this. It was one of my first messages that I gave almost like 17, 18 years ago. I shouldn't even say that out loud. Back when I was 10 years old, folks. Yeah, that's right. It was one of the first messages that I gave. I was introduced to this framework by an author who wrote the book Search to Belong. His name's Joseph Meyer. And his thesis was that we tend to limit our idea of community down to our closest friends, which he says is actually a bit myopic. It's a bit narrow-minded. And as he was teaching a class on community and belonging, he stumbled into this framework that really helps us understand that we experience connection. You do, I do, in four distinct spaces. And those spaces are the spaces that actually fuel your behavior. You have a public space that you belong, a social space that you belong, a personal space, and an intimate space. And so I want to walk through these just so that you understand the framework. A public space is when belonging happens in a common passion. You can feel this when you're around thousands of people and you have a similar passion. For example, yeah, where's my Lions fans, okay? A few of you. Yeah, you should be a lot louder than that, okay? Take a few cues from the obnoxious Steeler fans. They're always rowdy, okay? But if you're a Lions fan, it's like, man, did you see what happened in the stadium last week? Not just the win. Did you see fans? And even if you're not a Lions fan, if you've ever been to a sporting event with a team that you love, you know what happens? You're connected to that home team. You're like, you're in it together. You feel like you're one big family, so much so that you're hugging and you're high-fiving complete strangers when your team scores. You're sharing drinks. I mean, it's a bit ridiculous when you think about it. And the interesting thing is, you don't really care about their personal details. Like if in the middle of the play, somebody's like, well, tell me what you did all week. You'd be like, shut up and sit down. We're watching the game, you know? It's like there's this common, powerful connection. And even if you're the away team, you know what away teams do? They look for each other. They're looking, what are they looking for? They're looking for that public, like, sense of belonging, like people that are like me. If you're not into sports, you may experience this with your favorite musician. Like, do we have any Taylor Swift fans here? Any Taylor Swift fans? Oh, you guys are not very rowdy. Like, everything I see online is like, take over the world, you know? It's like, but Swifties, I think that's what you call it, you have like a common connection. There's things all around us, whether you're into sports or not. It could be brand names like the Stanley Mug Phenomena. Do we have any Stanley Mug fans, okay? Oh, no, no Stanley. Is it Owala? Is that how you say it? Owala? No, okay. Is it, are you Yetis? Are you like, are you just the plastic cup that comes with whatever drink that you get? Oh, Styrofoam, that's bad. You should probably quit that, okay? But I mean, the truth is, I'll give you another example. I was driving, this is my 2003 CR-V here. That's right. I'm in the 200,000 mile club and I'm shooting for three. So I was running a couple errands with my kids after Christmas. We were out on Airport Highway, headed out to Spring Meadows, and we're driving along and we're just, you know, small talk, and we look over, and there's almost an identical CRV. And, you know, it's like, this isn't like Jeep culture. There's no CRV culture. But we make eye contact with each other. We look at each other. We see each other looking at each other's cars, and we start fist bumping each other like we're best friends. I don't know this guy. We're smiling. And my kids and I, we were laughing all the way to Spring Meadows. It was this instant feeling of connection that you get with someone, even though you know nothing about them. Why? Because you're connected around a common passion. That is the power and significance of public belonging. And we can't minimize that. Where do you experience that in your life? Like, how often are you having those kinds of experiences that help you feel like you're a part of something that's bigger than yourself? I would recommend you have 2 to 3 of those a year. And you don't have to always spend a ton of money. This isn't like, spend $1,100 to go watch the Lions play next weekend or whatever the ticket prices are. But find those kinds of things where you can experience that. Do you know one of those experiences? It's church. And I'll talk about that in a couple minutes. The second area that Myers addresses is social belonging. And this is when you have a common place. You're connected by proximity. If public belonging is thousands of people, then social belonging is hundreds of people. Now, here's what's interesting. You happen to be in the same place, live in the same community. You actually learn names. Oftentimes, you know more faces. The best example that is kind of, I mean, let's be honest, we used to have several of these, and now they're starting to go away. This is one of the reasons why this is important. It's a grocery store. If you know Kaz Myers, you know where you live. If you've never heard of Kaz Myers, it's because you're not living close to that grocery store. You probably have a grocery store close to you, where if you shop there with some regularity, you run into some of the same people. You get to know them. You get to know the cashier. You know, it's like, this could be the gym or the YMCA. This could be work. It could be the pickleball court that you go to. You know each other, but you're not sitting down discussing each other's personal lives. You just happen to do life together. It's more than just public belonging. There's a little bit more personal sense. You have a sense that you're here together and you're willing to get to know a little bit about each other. Now, that's cool. When I'm working out at the gym, at the CrossFit gym, I know the names of many of the people that I work out with. And we talk about what are we doing this weekend in kind of generic terms. And there might be a couple of hangouts, but our primary connection is our proximity to each other at the gym. We're willing to suffer through this terrible workout. I mean, if we wanted something easy, we'd go to Planet Fitness. But sorry. Cheap. You know, we do CrossFit together. And here's the thing. If I worked out somewhere else, I wouldn't see him again. I mean, maybe, but the truth is we're connected by a kind of a common area that we associate with. This is one of the underrated, undervalued areas where you and I find space to belong. It's underrated. you're not fully appreciating the value or the space where you belong in this social space. You go to the next slide for me. Mark Grenevetter, he says that he called these the strength of weak ties. Weak ties are the web of relationships that you have in your life that you may not know everything about them, but they have, here's what he argues. He's a Harvard sociologist professor. He argues that these social ties, these weak ties, have greater influence in your life than your close friends. For example, how did you get the job that you have today? For those of you that are employed, I want you to think about it. Like, what is it? Not many of you, maybe you responded to something online, but I'm guessing many of you got the job that you have not because of somebody that you're really close to, but because of somebody that you were loosely connected to, a friend of a friend, somebody that you had seen. You kind of knew each other, and it created a conversation opportunity, and ta-da, that's the way it is for many, many people. Not everybody. I know I'm not reading every individual story. Another question, how did you get to church? How did you get to Cedar Creek? I'm guessing that aside from some of you who looked us up online, you had a friend that maybe you were close to that maybe has been inviting you for years, and you've been like, oh my goodness, seriously, you've been inviting me forever. And then, if you're honest, you noticed someone else in your social circle who you heard started attending. At the gym, it could be at work, somebody else who goes in your life, and you were like, oh, now all of a sudden you felt like you could trust that invite from a family member or friend. It's like, okay, I'll give it a try. We need to identify and cultivate this social space in your life. And not just view it as going to the grocery store, that may seem silly, or going to the gym, these aren't like, you don't need to share your deepest, darkest sin. You're just getting connected with the people around you, ideally 2 to 3 times a week. Connect. Be aware. If you're married, you need some spaces socially that you're connected for you, but you should also talk about spaces where you're connecting together in that space. It's valuable for you, where you just go out and have fun, names and faces. Church is one of the best social connections. It is one of the unspoken gifts that church brings to a community. We'll talk about that. The third space is personal. This is the obvious one. This is what we think of most of the time. It's that traditional friendship connection. It's the space where you are known and you get to know other people. So if this is thousands and this is hundreds, this friend space is dozens, okay? You're willing to make an effort to have coffee together and or drinks or meal. It's like you're hanging out with them intentionally. The British anthropologist Robin Dunbar suggests that we can hold about 150 to 200 contacts, names and faces, which means we have at max about 50 people that we can be friendly with in our life. And so who is this for you? Like, who are your close friends? Audit this group. Are they fueling or fighting against the changes that you want to make in your life? It's good to be aware of that. If you invest well, it will lead to what you'll find is there will be a few people where you have some meaningful relationships, because typically it is in this personal space where we discover the type of connection or the space where you can be fully known. It's that intimate space. It's the smallest of all of those spaces. If this is thousands and hundreds and this is dozens, then this last space is less than a handful. And so the perfect bag for this is, it may be awkward, but it's Victoria's Secrets, okay? Not because I think it gets intimate, like that kind, not that kind of intimate, but it's very small. And the word that I use here is you live unhidden with each other. And it doesn't always mean that that is your spouse. Now, it's helpful to have a couple people, and I think it's helpful when you can live unhidden with your spouse. Now, I do not recommend friendships for those of you who are married that could jeopardize your marriage. So men have relationships with men, women have relationships with women outside of the marriage relationship. To do that in a way with someone else other than like your sibling could really create some trauma in your marriage. But do you have any of these relationships? Do you have people that you can live unhidden with? Because each space matters, and each space that you belong fuels your behavior. Now, what I find interesting is Jesus experienced and created belonging in all four of these. Everywhere where Jesus went, crowds showed up. Thousands of people travel for thousands of miles to come and hear Jesus teach, and he would have compassion on them. He also didn't expect a ton from them, and he didn't ridicule them because they had a service relationship with him. There were thousands of people who were experiencing a surface-level belonging with him when he walked the earth. Then he had hundreds, not just 12, he had hundreds of followers, names and faces of people who traveled with him or hung out with Jesus. He would hang out at their house. One of my favorite stories in Matthew chapter 9, after Jesus invited Matthew to be one of his disciples, Matthew invited Jesus and his disciples to his home as dinner guests, along with many tax collectors and other disreputable sinners. But when the Pharisees saw this, they asked the disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with such scum?" Jesus went to Matthew's house to socially connect with Matthew's friends. Because it's important. It's important to build some of those weak ties with people. And isn't it cool that Matthew looked at Jesus, this religious teacher, and knew that it was safe to invite him to come and hang out with his friends who may not have had the best reputation? And notice who was frustrated. The religious. It's kind of sad, because I think we do that sometimes today, don't we? There's just a group of people that we feel like it's best if they're on the outside. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we try to do what we do. Make this a safe place for anybody to talk about anything. But Jesus connected with people socially, even if he didn't agree with them personally. He would invite them to follow him, sure, but he cared about them and respected them and allowed them to hold their own perspective. He would treat them honorably. We strive to be like that here. I think you should too. Now, of the hundreds who followed him, Jesus called 12 disciples. These are the disciples or apostles that many of you are familiar with. He did so much with the 12. They learned together. They laughed together. They disagreed with each other. I don't know if you've watched The Chosen, but I think The Chosen does a beautiful job of taking some creative license, yes, not necessarily straight from the Bible, but creative license, and depicting how this would have looked and felt. And so it's a great, great experience to watch. What you may not realize is of the 12, Jesus had three that he was really close to. These were Jesus' closest friends. I'll give you one example. In Matthew 17, 6 days later, while they were traveling, Jesus took who? Peter and the two brothers, James and John, and he led them up a high mountain to be alone. As the men watched, Jesus' appearance was transformed so that his face was shone like the sun and his clothes became white as light. Now, if you're not familiar with this, this is a bizarre experience. It almost sounds like somebody tripped out on some sort of inappropriate brownie or delightful, whatever your perspective is, and it was like they were seeing crazy things. Matthew wasn't there, but he heard about it from Peter, James, and John. Why did he do this? Jesus took three of the future leaders of the church, and he was giving them a greater understanding. He allowed them to see himself unhidden in his glory. And so those three saw aspects of Jesus that nobody else did. Another example that I think is really powerful is Jesus took Peter and the Zebedee's two sons, James and John, while he's in the Garden of Gethsemane. This is the night that he knows he's going to be betrayed and arrested, and eventually he's going to be crucified. He took those three, and he became anguished and distressed, and he told them, "My soul is crushed with grief to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." Think about this. Jesus, the Son of God, is asking these three, separate from everybody else, for help in his life. Jesus needed and leaned into intimate friendships and shared things that he was struggling with, not with everyone, but with a couple trusted people. If Jesus connected in these spaces, not just intimate, but all of them, I think we should too. Each space has purpose. So I want you to think about your life. How are you doing in each of these spaces? Where do you already have a strong sense of belonging? Where is there an opportunity to consider growing this year? Each of these spaces help fuel the life that you want, the behaviors that you want. And what's amazing is church can help with all four. First, church is a very public space. At Cedar Creek, we have thousands of people who watch in person, online, and around the community every weekend. Our database has over 22,000 active households right now. That's people who are engaging with us or have engaged with us just in the last 12 months. 22,000 households. So you are a part of something big, which I know for some of you was the initial turnoff. It's like, it's so big. But not only are you a part of Cedar Creek, you're a part of the what we would call the capital C church, the global church, this movement of God connected with all of the other life-giving churches in our community. We're not in competition with them. We actually want to see more and more people introduced to Jesus and follow him. And the last count that I had is there are far more people who are disconnected from church than those who are engaging with church. And so we have a huge mission in front of us. And you're not just connected with life-giving churches here. You're connected with life-giving churches all around the United States and the globe. For example, this weekend is the one-year anniversary of Purpose Church in Goodyear, Arizona, a church that you all helped start 1 year ago in Arizona. It's amazing. Look at the book of Acts. In the book of Acts, this is where the church started, the Acts of the early church. Those who believe what Peter said when he talked about the significance of Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection were baptized and added to that church that day, 3,000 in all. And this was just the beginning. In one day, they went from like zero to 3,000. That's incredible, right? And so what did they do? How did they publicly connect with each other? All the believers devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to fellowship, to sharing in meals, including the Lord's Supper, and to prayer. It became a big church overnight. And so they devoted themselves to the mission. And here was the result. A couple of verses later, it says, each day the Lord added to their fellowship, their number, their church, those who were being saved. See, the church grows when we lean into this sense of community together. Lives are changed when people sense that they're belonging to something that's bigger than themselves. And that's our prayer, that God would add to our fellowship those who are being saved. Not so that it's like, look at how big we are, but it's because I see God at work. And his dream is to have a movement of people that are following him. But in order to do that, we need to create social spaces for people to belong. We need to get to know each other. This is the power at Cedar Creek of campuses. I mean, if you go to West Toledo right now and were to pull in, you know what you would hear? West is best. That's right. You hear it all the time. Every time I go, you know, Ben, West is best. And right now, Finley is ready to drive up and fight you because they're pretty convinced that they're the best, okay? And Oregon, as small as they are, they're feisty, okay? They'll pick up a fight with anybody. Each campus, in a playful way, you know, it's like they're not literally going to fight people, but every campus has its uniqueness. And when people feel connected there, it's powerful. Some are in more conservative communities. Others are in more diverse and potentially aspects, liberal politically. It's like depends on where you live and where you're from. And here's what I love, is instead of zeroing in on our differences and trying to look and meet with people who do what we do, vote the way that we vote, believe what we believe in the aspects of our daily life, no, we're committed to the one thing that matters most. That's introducing people to Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. And so your campus is where you can know names and faces and where you are a name and face. That's right. You play an important part just by engaging here. When you show up, you're a piece of that. You're present. There is space for connection. Here's the way the Bible says it. In Hebrews, it says, keep on loving each other as brothers and sisters. Don't forget to show hospitality to strangers. For some who have done this, have entertained angels without realizing it. We're to love each other as brothers and sisters, not because we're actually related, but because we're God's adopted kids. And we're to see people the way that God does whether they see themselves that way or not. And so we show hospitality because you never know who it is that you may be serving. And so I would encourage you to get a little more connected at your campus. A simple way to do that is to linger after a service for a little bit, meet somebody new, connect in the lobby, go out for dinner or brunch or whatever. Look for people that you haven't met yet. Take a moment to meet the people around the seats that you sit. This is a simple way for those of you that aren't quite connected to just take a risky step. Introduce your friends to each other because you play a part in making this a place where people can socially belong. And it's here in this social space that opens the door for personal connection. When you start to learn names and faces, then all of a sudden you hear one person is leading a group and it's like now it's not so intimidating to show up at their house or wherever it is that they're meeting. I mean, this is what group life is all about. This is what joining the dream team. This is partly why it's so important. This is where the church becomes small. You're not just a part of a service listening to me yak, yak, yak all day. Instead, you're sitting in a circle talking to each other. I was at South Toledo this past week. They had a euchre group. Where they were, I mean, nothing says Midwest, like, life, Ohio life, like a euchre group, okay? It's like, it was amazing. And so what do? They small talk. They're building loose ties and friendship with each other, getting to know each other's lives in a non-intrusive way. And then right across the lobby in a classroom was a men's step study group where they're talking about the work that God is doing in their life as they try to find freedom from hurts, habits, and hang-ups in their life. It's powerful. I was talking to Lindsay just last week out of South Toledo. She said it was in serving and joining a group where that totally changed her connection to the church. And so we have a variety of groups available. And what's nice is we put them in a semester, a start date and an end date, so that if you find yourself somewhere where you're like, I don't know that I want to keep hanging out with these people, there's an end date where you can be like, all right, I'll try another group next semester. Have fun, y'all, you know. And you're not like, I'm leaving you because, you know, it's awkward or whatever. Here's why this is so important. In Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. I know many of you have heard this before, but iron can't sharpen itself. And yet so many people feel like you can sharpen your life by yourself. We need friends. It takes other sources. And so find a group of people. Connect with them. Be open with them. Because what you might discover, although it's no guarantee, it is typically from this space where you begin to develop a little history together, and that can lead to an intimate friendship. And these are the people who help you with the real you. These are the people that can see the real you, and they love and encourage you and help you grow, and this doesn't happen overnight. I think this is a friendship that you all crave. We all crave it, but we're also very intimidated by it. Because our deepest fear is if people really knew what went on under the surface, they would reject me. They wouldn't love me. And so if you don't have those, man, it doesn't happen overnight. And you can't just go out in public spaces and go, hey, I need really, here's all my dirty laundry. People are going to look at you weird, okay? You need a few people in your life. In the first church, the brother of Jesus, James, he says this, confess your sins not just to God, but to each other. And not to everybody, but to a couple of other people. Pray for each other so that you may be healed. The earnest prayer of a righteous person has great power and produces wonderful results. Confession is just being honest about the real you. And prayer is powerful, especially when you have people praying for what you're really dealing with. I got to watch this firsthand with the men at Toledo Correctional. Each week on Tuesday, these individuals show up in circles from different backgrounds with different struggles and different trauma in a very dark and difficult environment to share honestly about what it is that they're going through. I mean, think about it. If Jesus needed it, so do you. We all do. I think we crave that. So we have to learn and grow into that type of friendship, which means we have to become that type of friend. The truth is there's so much I want to add, but I just want you to audit your belonging. Take a look. What step is God inviting you to take? Because I think it's time for some of you to take maybe a step of connection here in this season, to linger or look at groups or maybe to be a little bit more intentional about somebody in your life that you think you can share a little bit more about what you're going on, what's going on. Your belonging will fuel your behavior. And so if you want to see change, you're going to need people around you that's going to help. Now, the truth is, it's not just for you. I'm not just talking about this for you. There's actually a bigger reason why this is important, why it's important for our whole community. In 2023, last year, the Surgeon General posted a report. Our epidemic of loneliness and isolation. And he goes on to describe the alarming trends that's happening, not just in our community, but across the country. 30% increase in suicide. 36% of Americans feel lonely most of the time. 45% of teenagers use the word helpless to describe how they feel. 45%. 400% increase in people saying, I have no close friends. This study revealed that social isolation increases your chance of death more than smoking 15 cigarettes a day, drinking 6 alcoholic drinks a day, a lack of physical activity, obesity, or air pollution. Think about that. You know, we could blame it on social media. Oh, just social media. It's the institutions, it's the government, it's the economy. But the truth is, we actually have the power to change that. The church is a space for people to belong, but that only happens when we are willing to lean into these spaces together. Jesus understood that. His disciples understood that. That's why they say things like, dear friends, since God has loved us that much, we surely ought to love each other. And so, yes, first, remember that God loves you. How much? He left heaven to come here to help you sense how you can belong with him. So what do? We should look around and love his way. We should create space for people to belong. Should love each other. Look at what happens when we do. He says, no one has ever seen God, but if we love each other the way that God has loved us, God lives in us and his love is brought to full expression. Like loving each other, creating space for people to belong, brings out the best of God in us and through us to our lonely and weary community. And one of the most profound things about the church is that it can be full of diversity, full of people of different ethnicity and different backgrounds and different socioeconomic status and different preferences, and yet unified by one person who gave his life for us, who has the power to change us. So you want to be a part of the solution? Do you want to experience that kind of change in your life? Do you want change? And if so, invest in relationships that fuel that change publicly, socially, personally, and intimately. And let's offer our community a more connected way to live. Let's continue to offer spaces for people to belong here so that they can sense where they belong with God. The same way that God graciously stepped out of his comfort zone to create space for you and me to belong with him. So I'd love to give you a prayerful moment right now, wherever you're at. If it's helpful, close your eyes. Just kind of audit those social, personal spaces in your life. And maybe you're sitting here like you've never really taken a step of faith. Maybe you're still asking questions about next steps, but you just want to go all in. Tell God, I want to go all in with you today. I want to be a part of your family. In the quietness of your heart, just say, God, I surrender my life to you, and I want to be a part of your work in our world. Maybe you're feeling alone or disconnected. Maybe God's Spirit is prompting you to take a step into community, whether that's getting to know people at your campus or at a group. Maybe it is time to detox and to, you know, just create some space between some unhealthy people and you in your life. Maybe you've been closed off because somebody hurt you. Maybe it's time to extend forgiveness and open your heart up again. God, would you open up our eyes to the ways that you want us to share your love at work, at school, in our church, in our community? Would you help us to be hospitable to strangers? And would you continue to reveal your heart for people through our church every time we show up in every circle that we're a part of? God, we want more and more people to encounter your life-changing love, and we pray this in Jesus' name.